Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. It's been a while since we've had an Issue Is debate. We've had all these newsmaker interviews for the last couple months. That this week is a chance to go back to sort of our roots and our origins of having smart people with different perspectives, have a civil debate, who like each other, and actually have a conversation in America. So with us on the left this week is Ethan Bierman, a well-known attorney, who's often on Fox News. And also on the right is Michael Knowles, who is on The Daily Wire, host of The Michael Knowles Show for them, part of PragerU, host Verdict with Ted Cruz podcast. You see him all over the place. They've been on together before, and they're back together again this week to debate the issues of vaccine mandates and also later President Biden. And a little later in our podcast, we'll be talking with Arash Markazi of the Mightier 1090 about the Rams 49ers football game. But let's start with Michael and Ethan. Ethan, Michael, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Great to be with you, Alex.
All right, so let's start the big debate in Sacramento, which is over vaccines and kids. State Senator Richard Pan, who also happens to be a pediatrician, is pushing legislation to require all California kids to be vaccinated in order to attend in-person schools. This would start in January of next year. He would get rid of the personal belief exemption for vaccines, but a medical exemption would remain. I spoke with Dr. Pan this week on the Fox 11 News special report. Here's some of that.
Those families, they deserve the right to know that when they send their child to school, their child will be safe, and that when they come home, they're not going to bring a disease that may actually harm or even kill someone in their family.
But doctor, we know now with the Omicron variant that the vaccines are not stopping people who have been vaccinated from either getting COVID or spreading COVID.
Certainly vaccines alone are not going to completely stop transmission. That's why we still need to continue other mitigation measures like masks and doing testing and good ventilation.
Let's start this off with Michael. What do you think of this proposal?
Well, I think your question was quite apt, Alex, because the reasoning that the state senator is giving will not be accomplished by the vaccine mandates. They, as you say, don't stop the spread. They don't stop infection. We know that the infection fatality rate for kids from all forms of COVID, and especially from this most mild form, the Omicron variant, is extremely low. You're looking at about 400 deaths of kids under 18 per year since the pandemic began. And when you factor in severe comorbidities, it's probably significantly lower than that. That is much less than deaths from cancer. That's much less than deaths among children from heart disease. It's about on par with the flu and with pneumonia. So it doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. Plus, there are some genuine concerns here. Belgium, for instance, just stopped recommending the Moderna vaccine for people under 31, all the way under 31, to say nothing of kids who are much, much younger, because of fears of myocarditis side effects. There are other side effects as well, including nerve damage and other things. So it just seems to me to be a solution that will not solve the problem that it is supposed to solve and could cause a lot of other problems as well.
Ethan, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I obviously disagree with Mr. Knowles on this one. Look, so 400 dead kids don't matter to the right anymore. Why have vaccines?
I don't think I said that.
So myocarditis, by the way, since Michael focused on that, is a very important one. What they have found is those who get the vaccine and have a minor case of myocarditis that is quickly resolved is unlike those who get COVID without the vaccine, and it's a severe myocarditis that results, let alone the difference between reduced infection from those who get the vaccine and the fact that we already require vaccines for children to attend school for things like polio, MMR, DTaP. There are so many vaccines that are already required. This is par for the course to protect our children and the community. And it's important to note the science is overwhelmingly in favor of taking a multi-layered approach like Dr. Pan talked about. And as long as there is still medical exemptions allowed, then I think that that's the right move for community protection, because I don't want my child coming home and transmitting it to my grandparent and then them passing away. It's just called basic safety and precaution because we live in a community.
Is this basic safety, Michael?
This is not basic safety, and it actually is a whole lot of risk. So what Ethan's argument here relies on is following the science and the scientific expertise. The problem is that the science has changed rapidly and contradicted itself. The public health authorities, specifically on this issue of COVID, no longer have credibility. They have held both sides of the masking issue. They held both sides of the vaccine issue. We were told by Dr. Fauci, Rochelle Walensky at the CDC, Joe Biden, that the vaccines absolutely would stop infection and transmission. Then they told us that that was not true. We were told that there were no side effects. I'll give you an example, not no side effects whatsoever, but a very specific one. We were told by the public health experts that the vaccines could not alter a woman's menstrual cycle. There was no effect. It defied the science, one doctor told us. And then one study proved that wasn't true. I'm not saying that the effect on something like a woman's menstrual cycle is necessarily huge. I'm not saying it's many days or many weeks. What I'm saying is that things that we were told were not scientifically possible turned out to be happening. And so because there are no long-term data here, because the infection fatality rate is so extraordinarily low, contrary to Ethan's, I think, uncharitable and unfair suggestion that the right doesn't care about kids dying, I think the observation we're making is that you're never going to obliterate illness specifically from schools. And so when you're looking at deaths and sicknesses here that are on par with the flu and on par with pneumonia, we might not want to engage in a mass vaccination campaign for an basically untested technology.
Ethan?
I couldn't disagree more. The point here is simple. If you can prevent deaths, prevent them. If you can have a minor symptomatic side effect versus being intubated or dying, these are dramatically different things. Michael is misrepresenting what happens with science. Science is very simple. We take data, we analyze the data against a thesis, a hypothesis, and then we change based on new data. What Michael just described as being double-sided or flip-flopping or what is a lie. That's how science works. When new data comes in and refutes previous data, that's called science. And then changing what the recommendation is based on the new data is exactly how science works. This is not politics. Politics is flip-flopping, whereas one day I care about kids, so by golly, we have to ban abortion. And the next day is I don't really care about kids when they're dying with something that's preventable, or I'm going to remove the ability for women to have access to health care. Yeah. So we really care about kids. No, no.
We know there's been a lot of politics in COVID from both sides on this since it began. But Ethan, I have a question about the enforcement of this, right? So LA Unified, the biggest district in California, tried to do this and ended up having to punt on it because so few kids did it. They were worried about having thousands of kids out of school. We've seen this in other school districts around the state as well. Are you concerned about actually enforcing this and potentially sending thousands of kids to remote learning again?
Yes. I actually am very concerned about that. I'm concerned that we have places like a children's museum in Colorado closed because angry parents misled by the right won't put on a mask, shutting down a children's museum. We have a butterfly center in Texas closed due to terroristic threats from angry parents. It's the parents, it's not the kids who are the issue here. Parents who are being overwrought with emotion due to misleading information from the right, or in some cases, outright lies. But look, I am most concerned about the kids. I think kids are way more resilient than we give them credit for. Kids aren't the ones who have issues with masks. Parents do. Kids aren't the ones who have issues with getting a vaccine. Parents do. So the issue here, and I agree with you, I'm concerned that forcing a vaccine mandate, a COVID vaccine mandate, is going to lead to kids. I think Dr. Pan might be wrong on this one. And I think that we're going to have to do things like focus on the ventilation systems and enforcing the mask mandates more than enforcing a vaccine right now.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there.
Hope you're enjoying Michael Knowles, Ethan Bierman's debate. Now let's bring up a new topic. President Biden, here's some of him this week.
He made a historic candidate, someone who's worthy of Justice Breyer's legacy.
President Biden will be nominating a successor to California's own Stephen Breyer, who has served on the Supreme Court for nearly 30 years. One of the justices on the
of the California Supreme Court is among the potential nominees to replace him. That announcement may give President Biden a political lifeline at a time when he's struggling at the polls. Back with our panel on the right, Michael Knowles of the Daily Wire. But let's begin with progressive attorney Ethan Behrman. Ethan, what letter grade would you give President Biden 1 year on, and why?
Oh, wow. I would give him a B+, and I would give that because he got infrastructure passed. He reduced childhood poverty by roughly 1/3 in the United States. We have a record GDP growth, record number of jobs added. We have unemployment under 4%. We have alliances back in line globally with our traditional allies. We have progress happening regarding climate change and issues therein. And he's been working on restoring the federal courts with good judicial pitches, judicial picks. So I think he's a B+, and I think there's a lot of positives that I think the media likes to not focus on.
Let me guess, Michael's grade not going to be quite as kind.
Not quite there. I'm glad that I've discovered the last man in America who seems to approve of the job that Joe Biden is doing, because the polling shows that the vast majority of Americans do not. I would give him a D. The reason I don't give him an F is because he has not yet plunged us into a massive war, though it appears that he might be able to do that as we look at the crisis in Ukraine. Speaking of war, obviously there was the disaster in Afghanistan, which was largely his fault because of the timetables that he insisted on, because of his refusal to hold the Bagram Air Base before he evacuated the rest of the country. He didn't evacuate the rest of the country. He left a lot of Americans behind. Speaking of foreign issues, there's the border. This is the absolute worst year for illegal border crossings in at least 20 years, if not ever. Those aren't my words. Those were the words that were caught on tape of Joe Biden's Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas. Inflation is at a 40-year high. Biden doesn't own that entire problem, but he does own a lot of it because of his policies on energy, on easy money, and on the lockdown. The mandate's creating a labor shortage, which, of course, is going to send prices going up. And then there's his admitted failures on COVID. That was the one issue that Joe Biden had been above water on and that the people still supported him on. And he's flopped on that, too. Joe Biden began his presidency by saying, I'm going to shut down the virus. What did he say just a few weeks ago? There's no federal solution. He's admitting that Trump was actually right in the approach to the virus. So I think it's basically an unmitigated disaster. And the whole purpose of this Supreme Court nomination is to try to give him one victory after the failure of almost his entire legislative agenda.
I mean, Ethan, whatever you think of everything of what Michael just said, we know that the polls do show that President Biden is underwater right now and that Democrats are not in a good position going into the midterms. The president's only got a few months to really get some sort of legislation through. What do you think is the most important thing that he needs to do to turn things around politically?
Well, I think the most important thing for the Democrats to do that will help in the midterms is to figure out what the right compromise looks like for the Build Back Better agenda. I mean, it was Joe Manchin who single-handedly torpedoed that legislation. So it's a matter of figuring out what needs to happen there. Look, it's not anywhere near as bad as you guys are making it out to be. First off, he's multiple points ahead of where the former guy was at this stage in his presidency as well. He's polling better than him. The special elections that have happened over the last several months have gone overwhelmingly for Democrats. So I think that there are lots of positive things happening for the Democrats. But my biggest thing is figuring out how to get at least some portion of Build Back Better passed.
And it seems like a lot of that would be listening to Joe Manchin and say, what do you want to do, and then doing that. So, Michael, 1 minute. I know you're not a fan of President Biden, but if he could do something to turn things around, what would that be?
If he could do one thing to turn things around, I would say it would be to resign. But actually, that's the best political advantage that Biden has going for him. Because though he is extraordinarily unpopular, his approval ratings are around 30, his vice president is somehow even less popular. Quite an accomplishment. She's around 27%. And so, yes, the best thing he's got going for him is that he's the most popular guy in an extremely unpopular administration.
Well, I think the joke there, by the way, is if both Biden and Kamala Harris go, guess what? You guys get President Pelosi. And I know that the Republicans like her even less.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
That would be fun. All right. Well, and either real quick to either one of you, do you think there's any chance that Kamala Harris gets appointed to the Supreme Court?
Zero.
Slim, but possible.
Yeah, we will see what happens on that front. But it is always great to hear from both of you. We really do appreciate your perspective. We're going to have to leave it there. Real quickly, also, Rams, Niners, who do you got?
Rams by 10.
I think the Yankees by 50.
Okay. Our thanks to Ethan and Michael. Now let's go to football. Big, big topic right now. Arash Markazi of the Mightier 1090, formerly of ESPN and also of the LA Times. He is with us this week to break down the big game that's got two of California's biggest teams in it. Arash joins us right now from an Uber in the middle of a snowstorm in New York. He was supposed to be at a different place, but got stuck behind traffic. So thanks to technology, he can join us. Let's hope this signal holds. Arash, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Thank you. You know, the truth of the matter is parking is so much at SoFi Stadium this weekend. I am trying to find a parking spot. $500, $600. Let's do this, Alex.
All right. So let's talk about this game. Why have we seen so many more San Francisco fans buy tickets for this game, buy tickets for the last game? How can the Rams not get more people in their own stadium?
Hey, Alex, we're the same age. No one who is below the age of 40 grew up a Los Angeles Rams fan. The Rams were in St. Louis for 21 years, and the price you have to pay for that, you do not have diehard, hardcore fans that will be paying $1,000 for a ticket. That is not something that's possible. That's not going to happen. Rams fans are, they do exist. There are Rams fans, but will they pay $1,000? And I just mentioned this before, $700 to park the car for the game on Sunday, that is not going to happen. So unfortunately, you will have more 49er fans there Sunday than Los Angeles Rams fans.
All right, so we are, of course, taping this before the game. Some people will see this after the game. Who wins the game?
I think the Rams do. I totally get it. They've lost six straight times. They've been swept the last three seasons. They lost the last game of the season. The Rams are the better team. The Rams are the superior team. This is the only game that matters. No one cares about the last six games. If they win it on Sunday, all the work that they did, they went all in to go to the Super Bowl this year. It's all about playing at SoFi Stadium. 2 weeks from Sunday, they want to play in that Super Bowl.
You know, a lot of fans thought that last weekend was the best weekend of football ever. The ratings really threw the roof. It seems like in the midst of this pandemic, we all need something to celebrate. We need some joy. And this is finally some good news. Talk about the sort of the role of sports in getting us through all of this.
Sports has always been the escape for us, Alex. No matter what we're going through in life, we have sports. That's why at the beginning of the pandemic, it was so hard because we didn't even have sports. And then when we got sports back without fans. And we truly appreciated how much the fans meant, how much this Sunday, 70,000 fans at SoFi Stadium, what that means. Sports gives us that time away from the real world where we don't have to worry about what we're going through with our life, with our job. We want to watch football, and you were right. Last weekend was the best Saturday of football, the best Sunday, best weekend of football we've had in a long, long time.
And don't have to worry about things like being stuck in an Uber in a snowstorm.
Exactly.
Next up is the Super Bowl at SoFi. And in the years ahead, SoFi and California really generally will be at the center of the sports universe. This is something you've written a lot about.
Listen, the reason that they built this $5 billion palace is not just to host the Super Bowl. It's the college football championship game, which will be here a year from now. The World Cup in 2026, the Olympics in 2028. And I'm hearing we're going to get the Super Bowl right back in 2027. All these events are coming to Los Angeles because of SoFi.
Our thanks to Arash. Our thanks to Michael and Ethan. Our thanks to you for listening this week. I'm Alex Michelson. Hope the Rams win. And I hope I don't look like an idiot for saying that if you listen to this after the game is already over. Of course, we're going to have special coverage of the Super Bowl in California over the next couple of weeks, plus your regular political debates here as well. We'll see you next time. Reach out to us on social media, like us, review us, all that good stuff. Thanks for listening to The Issue Is.